If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Man, that just gets you up and punches you right straight in the face, doesn't it? Man, I love that. Whether you like it or not, that rocks. Okay, here we go. Thank you very much, RJ Hinder and crew. Another fine addition. Thank you very much for sending your audience this way. I welcome everybody, good folks listening to RJ Hinder, and incorporated you in with the 2A Radio family. I'm feeling good. So, a little bit of housekeeping, guys. First of all, right here at RBN, Republic Broadcasting, we're always trying to spread the word and get the truth and the information out there to the masses. Well, we could always use a little bit of help from friends. So, for $8, $8, that's it, and it's flat fee, $8, you can get 100 generic RBN cards. I say generic because they don't have anybody's name and title on them that you can hand out. And these are good looking cards. These are not just some sort of cheap thing that came off a laser printer or bubble jet. These are very nice printed cards. Now, I come from a printing background. I was raised in a print shop. I know what good work is and I know what garbage shortcuts are. This is good looking stuff. For $8, you can get 100 of these cards to hand out. You can also, it also comes with a bumper sticker, that's included, as well as a free copy of Aaron Russo's America, From Freedom to Fascism. If you have not seen this particular video, it's a movie, it's a documentary that Aaron Russo did. It was his last project before he died of cancer. And RBN's own Dave Champion happened to be one of Aaron's consultants on this movie, because he goes into a lot of things dealing with taxes as well. It's a very, very encompassing movie. I saw this thing a couple years ago. It is great. And again, Dave Champion, he has his show here on RBN Monday through Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time. He has the hour just before John Stadtmiller comes on. So he had involvement in Freedom to Fascism. And with that being said, $8 is going to get you the 100 business cards, the bumper stickers, and Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism. And you can get that one of two ways. You can either send the $8 in to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard. That's two different words. Double, then Creek, I guess three different words, then Boulevard, Suite 302. Okay? That's in Round Rock, two different words, Texas, TX, 78664. Or you can call up. You can call 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. 800-724-2719, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. And you can get all of this, the 100 cards, as well as the bumper sticker, as well as Aaron Russo's copy, From Freedom to Fascism, for $8. So take care of that. Got plenty of news, information, commentary, all that great stuff coming up in the rest of the show. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm going to hit a few emails that I've had, and a couple of these have actually been sitting around in the inbox for a little while. Pete writes, and he says, I got a couple questions for you. He says, what do you recommend as a bolt-action sniper rifle, chambered in .308, and also your scope preferences? And he says, does your suppressor work for both .223 and .308? If so, can you provide the info so I can check it out? Then he continues, he says, my buddy's perfecting a recipe for subsonic .223 with a suppressor. As all you hear is the click of the action and the sound of the target being hit. It won't cycle, so it becomes a bolt action, but is a badass since it is as quiet as my crossbow, which crossbows are quite quiet. If you were inside a house and shooting it, nobody would know what hit them. It's that quiet. It's good out to 100 yards based on a 55-grain FMJ round. His suppressor only works with 22 caliber rounds. He's currently looking at a $9,000 infrared scope that makes night vision a thing of the past. I don't have the coin to drop, so I'm just going to get my stuff together with the scratch that I have. Later, Pete. Love Pete. Pete's a great dude. All right, so let's talk, first of all, about a .308 rifle. There's some standards out there in the industry. Previously, you'd see the Remington 700 PSS, which is Police Sniper System or something like that. I forget what. The Remington 700 XCR is an excellent gun. It comes in .308. You can also get it in .30-06, but it comes in, let's see, the XCR, it's .308. It is a 24-inch barrel, overall length of about 44.5 inches. The length of pull is about right. It's just under 13.5 inches. It's got a drop at the comb for your cheek weld at 1 3/8 inches, which is just about perfect. Comes with a little recoil pad, the limb saver on it. About 7.5 pounds empty, with no scope on it. And it retails for about $1,100. All right. So the rifle itself is a little bit pricey, but it's very good. Here's the interesting thing about the 700 XCR. The rifling of the barrel is not as exactly at 90 degrees from the bullet. It's at a slightly different angle, which is supposed to enhance something to do with the internal ballistics, which is what happens inside the barrel. And then it's supposed to enhance something to do with external ballistics from there. The other one that they have is the Remington 700 SPS Tactical. Now, the main difference that I know about these guns is the SPX is a 20-inch barrel. Now, they also have the SPS Varmint, which is in a smaller caliber. They have a .223 Remington or a 5.56 NATO. They also have the .308 Winchester, which is, again, that's the 7.62x51 NATO. That has a 20-inch barrel, 1/12 twist, about 7.5 pounds, about the same weight, a little bit shorter, 40 inches overall. It'll hold a total of 5 rounds, both of these guns. They have an internal box magazine of 4 rounds. You can fit a fifth one into the chamber. And this gun retails for about half the price, about $550. It's drilled and tapped and ready for scope. If you can find a Remington 700 PSS, that's excellent as well. That is a 24-inch barrel, heavy barrel gun. My gun is actually a Savage, and it is a Savage 10FP-LE2. What all that stands for, I don't know, but it's a Savage 10FP-LE2. And I got that gun for about $450, better part of 10 years ago. The scope that I put on it is better than double that. The industry standard for the scopes for these sorts of guns, first of all, would be something with a mil dot reticle. You can either go with the Army mils or you can go with the Marine Corps mils. The Army mils are round. The Marine Corps mils are ovular. You can also now get a minute of angle scope rather than mil dots and then convert them to minutes. This could be an entire show. We're not going to get into it right now. But minutes of angle and mil radians, mil dots, are a couple of different measurements on how to figure out the size of something and then the distance of something. You have to use some calculation. There's a little device out there called the Mill Dot Master, and you can get that from many sources online, including Brownells. That's a good thing to have if you have a Mill Dot scope. You also have the Mill Dot 2, which between each dot there is a little small line. You have the TMR reticle, which is offered by Leupold, and the TMR is actually better for ranging, but the lines are so thin in bright light, it's oftentimes difficult to use. The kind of the industry standard for the last many years for the scopes for these guns, if you're going to do a long-range precision rifle, is the Leupold Mark IV. That is a 3.5 to 10 power with a 30-millimeter tube, and I believe it's a 40-millimeter objective lens. And that is really kind of been the standard. That's essentially what I've got with the illuminated reticle. So if it's dark out, I can turn this on and the reticle glows up red. Now, here's the thing. If inside the scope you have an illuminated reticle, oftentimes downrange from that reticle, you can see that little red light or green light, whatever you happen to have on yours. Mine is red. You can see it from the other side. There are a couple of scopes out there that are so nice and so fancy that if you light up the illuminated scope, you cannot see it from the other side. I believe you can get that one of those from Night Force. Night Force is a good scope. One of the other really top-of-the-line scopes is U.S. Optics. Now, let me tell you what I have heard. Not what I know, but what I have heard about U.S. Optics. U.S. Optics has wonderful glass. Everything's in the glass. Nikon has wonderful glass. I've just never shot one of their scopes for durability. The Springfield Armory, they used to make these long-range tactical scopes, and the glass was great, but the internal mechanisms I found to be weak. I never found these things to last more than about a day and a half through a long 4 or 5 day course. So those really didn't pass the deal. And a couple of times I found Night Forces. We found Night Forces that would not do a shoot-the-box drill. That's where you aim center, fire around. You adjust it 5 minutes to the right, fire, 5 minutes up, 5 minutes to the left, another 5 minutes left, 5 minutes down, 5 minutes down again, 5 minutes to the right, and then back up 5 minutes up. And you end up shooting this box around the center hole. And the last one wouldn't return to center. We found that on several different Night Forces over the years. However, I understand Night Force has been doing a better job with their stuff, and these are very durable scopes, and back on it for the new stuff. U.S. Optics. Now, wonderful glass, wonderful product. However, in years past, I have been told by many a good sources that their customer service was horrendously bad. I also heard that the guy that owned the place retired and turned it over to his son a few years ago, who has turned the customer service around 180 degrees, and I understand, again, I don't know because I haven't dealt with them, I understand that their customer service is now fantastic. Their products are very expensive. You can easily drop $3,500 on a U.S. Optics scope, and I understand that it's worth every dime. Now, the Mark IV, the Leupold Mark IV is about $1,200. Another thing I have to say from personal experience is Leupold's customer service is second to none in any industry. They are flat fantastic. Had a student in a class once. He takes his precision rifle out. He's going to sight it in. Something happens with his Leupold scope where something breaks on it. So he calls Leupold and said, look, I'm trying to sight this thing in. I've got a class I'm going to, blah, blah, blah. What can you do for me? Well, okay, send us your scope back. We're going to send you a replacement to at least use for the class. So he sends his scope back. They sent him a new one without him having even sent his back yet. He got it the next day, overnight. I guess it was day after next. They shipped it out the next day. They shipped it to him overnight. He got it, and it was much better than the scope he had had. It was a higher-end version. He sent him a Leupold Vari-X 3 long-range tactical. They sent him a Mark IV, which is more sturdy, back with an illuminated reticle. So he sends his back. They say, look, we're not going to be able to fix this thing. We could either replace it or you can keep the one that we sent to you, which is worth $400 or $500 more than the one that he sent to them. And he's, no, zowie, I'll keep this one. Of course, that scope worked just fine in the course. So that's how good, as an example, Leupold's customer service has been. So the Leupold Mark IV on top of any of these guns, the one thing I'm going to recommend especially if you're going to go with a longer 24 or 26 inch barrel, minus a 26 inch barrel, is to get a single piece scope mount, quality scope mount, and get one with about a 20 MOA built into the base. What happens is the back end of the base sits up higher than the front end of the base. It gives you 20 minutes of angle just on the base. What that means is when you sight these guns in at 100 yards, which is standard, you end up having the reticle inside the scope almost to the top of the adjustment. Therefore, as you adjust it down because of distance, you'll be able to get further distance out of your scope. All right? Just to give you an example, I used to have a flat base on mine. My scope ran out of adjustment at 725 yards. I then put a 20 MOA base on my scope. My adjustment now runs out at about 1,100 yards, which is about the limit of a 308. Sometimes you can push it to 12, but that's rather unpredictable most of the time. Anyhow, hope we covered those. If you have any questions, you can call 800-313-9443. I'll address them in the next segment. Otherwise, we'll move on. Folks, stay tuned. Be back in just a few minutes. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys. I'm going to get back on to something about scopes that I thought of during the break. That is, to get a very good price on an essentially new rifle scope, you go to a website called samplelist.com. Samplelist.com. And you can get rifle scopes, binoculars, spotting scopes, range finders, mounts, rings, bases, bipods, and tripods. All that at one point in time have been on display for one reason or another. This list on this site always dramatically increases within about 2 or 3 weeks after the SHOT Show every year, because everything that was mounted on a gun usually ends up at Sample List. I got my scope through Sample List. It was valued at $1,200. I got it for eight. I got it for a third off. I got it for $800 because it had been displayed at some point in time, and then they put it back in the box, sent it to Sample List, and then I got it from them. I have sent many, many, many people to Sample List. Everybody's gotten a good scope. Let me give you some of the good names to consider. Now, keep this in mind. Americans by trade will go buy the most expensive gun they possibly can, which is unnecessary. And then they go to Walmart and they get some garbage Bushnell or something, some Simmons for $50 or $60, and throw it on the gun and expect it to work. Let me give you a rule of thumb. Your scope should cost 2 to 3 times that of your rifle in this instance. All right? Look at what goes on to most AR-15s. What do we put on most AR-15s? An ACOG. What's an AR-15 cost? Yeah, $800 or $900. What's an ACOG cost? Maybe about $1,200. All right, so they're maybe 30, 40, 50% more than the rifle. All right, that's kind of a good rule of thumb, just so you understand. High-quality scopes that I have actually had some experience with that I can tell you are good scopes. Leupold, that is a good name brand. Nikon, another good name brand. Schmidt and Bender, another good name brand. Swarovski, yet again, good name brand. How about this one? U.S. Optics, we just talked about them. They are good. Valdata is good. Pentax is showing some promise, as is Zeiss is also good. So those are the good ones that I have had experience with. If you're looking for a long-range tactical scope, and it begins with a price that is a six or less, as in $600 or under, you're probably going to not get that much life out of it. Now, the one cheap rifle scope that I have seen work fairly well is by SWFA, and they call it their Super Sniper. All right, these are not high quality. It's not SWFA. It is Tasco, I think, makes the Super Sniper. Is that it? Maybe it's just, SWFA, I think, bought it, the Super Sniper. Anyhow, those are about $250 or $300. $250, I think. I'm looking at one right here. It was a demo. It is a Mil-Dot reticle, $249.95. And I have seen these work fairly well and last a little while. So if you don't have the coin to drop on a really good scope to start with, try the Super Sniper by the SWFA SS. It's a 42mm objective lens. It's a Mil-Dot reticle, 30mm tube, a quarter minute of angle target knobs, which is good. That means for every adjustment at 100 yards, it adjusts the bullet a quarter of an inch. Now, let's talk about that. There are one MOA target knobs. Some people really love those things. Generally not guys with field experience. Because if you're shooting at 800 yards and you adjust once for elevation or windage on a one MOA adjustable scope, you just adjusted the impact 8 inches. Okay? Well, your whole target area is only 8 to 10 inches. So you're adjusting it from one side all the way to the other. The quarter minute would adjust it one quarter of that. So it's only adjusting it 2 inches at 800 yards. Much better for the longer ranges. I think a perfect world scenario for that would actually be a half inch MOA adjustment. I don't know if there's any scopes out there that actually adjust at a half minute. I just don't know. There are even eighth minute, and for some of those really retentive bench rest shooters, there's 16th minute. All right. So that means that at every inch it adjusts the bullet a 16th of an inch, which is a portion of the diameter of the bullet. Even a quarter minute adjustment isn't even the entire diameter of a 30 caliber bullet. Follow me? I hope you're following me. Anyhow, $250. Go to samplelist.com. You can get all kinds of different optics and glass at samplelist.com. I have found it to be very good. Anybody I've ever sent there has ended up with a good product at a good price. I don't know these guys. I've never spoken to them. I've never even met them. I just know I have personally had very good experience with these guys, and anybody I've recommended to go to them has had very good experience as well. You end up saving a lot of money on really good scopes. You can even get discounted U.S. Optics on there, and U.S. Optics is really high-end stuff. So there you go. Guys, stay tuned. There's more to come. We're going to be moving on after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys, welcome back. I had another email that came in. Again, this came in some time ago. But it says, Bill, do you know the statutory definition the government uses for the word firearm? The only thing I can find is 5845 definitions. Definition is read. There's a difference in the word gun, rifle, pistol, and shotgun. Please give me the statutory definition that the government uses for the word firearm. Now, and it goes on about a couple other things. Here's the thing. One thing I have learned from Dave Champion, of course, from Dave Champion Show, 3 o'clock Central here, RBN Monday through Friday. Dave is one of the leaders, if not the leader, in the tax amnesty movement. One of the things that I learned from Dave is that Congress defines a word beyond the common definition for their own purpose to be able to, rather than creating words, to narrowly define what they're looking for. For example, employee. All right? We know what an employee is, and wages. We know what wages are. An employee is somebody that works for someone else, and wages are what they earn, or that is represented in the paycheck that they get every couple of weeks, whenever payday comes. So if you're reading a tax form that uses the word employee and describes wages, we know, oh yeah, well, hey, I'm an employee and I earn wages. So you consider your, and they also define U.S. person as a citizen, a contract, blah, 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 blah. It goes through all kinds of stuff. The thing is each one of those words has a definition. U.S. person has a definition. Citizen has a definition. Employee has a definition. Wages have a definition. But they're not defined on the forms when they give you something like a 1099 or a W-4 to fill out. If you were to take the opportunity to look at those definitions, you realize they don't apply to the average person. They don't apply to the incredible vast majority in the higher than 95% of the people in the United States. Now, if you move on to later portions of the tax code, which is Title 26 of the U.S. Code, you will find all of those same words, U.S. person, citizen, wages, employee, all defined in other areas of the tax code to serve their purpose when it comes to other forms and definitions and things that you need to do. So the word employee in the tax code might have 7 or 8 different definitions. Sometimes they refer to foreigners deriving U.S. source income on U.S. soil, period. Sometimes they refer to life insurance salesmen. Other times they refer to people who have jobs within the federal government. But it's not everybody inclusive. U.S. person has a very narrow definition that they use in different areas. And it's not really to be sneaky. What it is it's to be able to narrow their, for their purpose, the law that they're putting together, so that the regulations can be created. So rather than creating new words, they use those legally defined terms as it pertains to the particular section of a law in which Congress is passing. And the Supreme Court has ruled that when Congress defines a word, you must use that legal definition, and you cannot use the common definition like what you'd find in Webster's Dictionary. Or even in Black's Law Dictionary. It has to be defined. I'm sorry, if it's defined, you have to use that. Which is why a lot of people believe that they should be filling out 1099s and accepting them, and W-4s and accepting W-2s and all that. Because they say, okay, U.S. person, citizen, blah, 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 okay, employee wages. All right, that fits me. Because you're using the common definition, not the one that has been spelled out in the actual law, where you realize, I don't come anywhere near fitting any of this. So no, I have no legal reason to have to fill this out. The thing is, the word firearm is defined in many ways, in many sections of the U.S. Code as well. Just to give you an example, you're going to be able to find definitions in the U.S. Code in Title 17, Title 18, Title 27, and, interestingly enough, in Title 26, which is the tax code. You can find different definitions for firearm. As a matter of fact, I'm about to pull up the one in the Title 26 UO, best code. Let's see. For the purposes of this chapter, a firearm, let's see, the term firearm means one, a shotgun having a barrel or barrels of less than 18 inches in length, or two, a weapon made from a shotgun, if such weapon has been modified to an overall length of less than 26 inches, or a barrel or barrels of less than 18 inches in length, three, a rifle having a barrel or barrels less than 16 inches in length, four, a weapon made from A rifle, if such weapon is modified, has an overall length of less than 26 inches, or a barrel or barrels of less than 16 inches in length. 5, any other weapon as defined in subsection E. 6, a machine gun. 7, a silencer as defined in subsection 219 of Title 18, U.S. Code. And 8, a destructive device. The term firearm shall not include an antique firearm or any device other than a machine gun or destructive device, which, although designed as a weapon, the Secretary finds by reason of the date of its manufacture, value, design, and other characteristics is primarily a collector's item and is not likely to be used as a weapon. B, machine gun. The term machine gun means any weapon which shoots, is designed to shoot, or can be readily restored to shoot automatically more than one shot without manual reloading by a single function of the trigger. Now, it keeps going on and on and on. So you get an idea of how these U.S. codes are written. So for the purpose of the income tax, of the tax system, this is defining essentially a Class 3 firearm, Class 2 and Class 3. Just so you understand this, a shotgun has to have a barrel length of 18 inches or more and an overall length of 26 inches. That includes, guys, if you have a folding or collapsible stock, when it's in its shortest position, it needs to be a minimum of 26 inches with a minimum of an 18-inch barrel. Rifles need to have the same overall length, a minimum of 26 inches, but the barrel can be as short as 16 inches. Anything, shotgun or rifle, shorter or smaller than that is considered an NFA gun. NFA is defined under the National Firearms Act of 1938, I think it was, as well as select fire or fully automatic machine guns and silencers, which I don't know what their holdup on silencers is. I mean, a lot of European countries, the silencers are considered polite and neighborly, so you're not making a whole bunch of noise. I don't really understand the whole holdup with silencers or what the idea was. But there's all different types of definitions of firearms. There is, let's see, the Columbia Encyclopedia reads it differently. Wikipedia reads it differently. Webster's reads it differently. Black's Law Dictionary reads it differently. There are so many different definitions. You have to find out exactly what they're coming at you with as to be able to figure out what the definition of a firearm is. It is long. It is arduous. It is a sorry excuse for a way of doing business. However, it's something we have to deal with. So let me see. There is another definition of firearm. This is out of Title 18, Part 1, Chapter 44 of the U.S. Code. It says the term firearm means A, any weapon, including a starter gun, which will or is designed to or may readily be converted to expel a projectile by the action of an explosive. B, the frame or receiver of such a weapon. C, any firearm muffler or firearm silencer. Or D, any destructive device. Such term does not include an antique firearm. Here's the term destructive device. An explosive, incendiary, or poisonous gas, a bomb, a grenade, a rocket having a propellant charge of more than 4 ounces, a missile having an explosive or incendiary charge of more than 1/4 ounce, a mine, or device similar to any of the devices described in the preceding clause. Right? Paragraph B, any type of weapon other than a shotgun or a shotgun shell, which the Attorney General finds is generally recognized as particularly suitable for sporting purposes, by whatever name known, which will or which may be readily converted to expel a projectile by the action of an explosive or other propellant, and which has any barrel or bore of more than 1/2 inch in diameter, and C, any combination of parts either designed or intended for use in converting any device into any destructive device described in subparagraph A or B, and from which a destructive device may be readily assembled. And it goes on and on and on. I could sit here and rattle this stuff off for the next week and put every single one of you to sleep. And the only thing that's going to wake you up is one of my bumpers. That's it. That is all I've got to tell you about this, is these definitions are all over the place. Most of the time, you can find something that you and I wouldn't define as a firearm. It's considered a firearm. A grenade is not a grenade. It's a firearm under that section. A suppressor, which all it does is reduce the sound of a round, that is considered a firearm. All right? So firearms definitions vary state by state as well. As a matter of fact, here in the state of Nevada, technically, anything that launches any projectile by any means is a firearm. A wrist rocket or slingshot would be considered a firearm under the narrowest definitions within the state of Nevada. A longbow and its arrow would be considered a firearm. Certainly a crossbow would. Guys, I got a question for you here. What came first, the chicken or the egg? And we're going to put this into guns. What came first, the rifle or the crossbow? Huh. What's been around longer? Anybody know? Does anybody know what came first? Did the rifle come and then we design the crossbow around it? Or did the crossbow come and then we design the rifle around it? How did that work out? I put that to the challenge, 800-313-9443. Any of you who may want to call and come up with that answer. If I don't hear from you during this break, which we have 5 minutes left of, I will answer it in the next break, in the next segment, actually. So here's the deal, guys. Depending on what part of the U.S. code anybody happens to be looking at, 17, 18, 26, or 27, which seem to be the areas where firearm is listed in the U.S. code, it all depends on how they're going to read the definition. Let's say you get stopped or for some reason get hassled or corrected or trying to be prosecuted or something related to a gun. They have to tell you what you're being charged with. From there, you can look into what the definition of that code is. Now, keep in mind, if they get, there's also, I believe, Chapter 15 of the U.S. Code also has something to do with firearm. It's all over the place. This would have to be the feds charging you with something dealing with guns. You'd have to find exactly what the charge is and then find out from what U.S. code they are prosecuting you or charging you with. Then you'd have to look up the definitions. From there, you keep your mouth quiet until you're in court or you're dealing with them and say, look, this is what my client's been charged with, and this is a legal definition, and you guys don't have any stake. Or you could find a part of the U.S. code that counteracts the one they're charging you with and saying, look, with all this information, they're not breaking the law, and then have it null and void. So anyhow, just so you understand, that's what we're dealing with when it comes to U.S. codes and firearms or anything else for that matter. The U.S. code is probably about 64 billion pages, and it's all a bunch of garbage. And they say that, hey, it's public information, and if you guys want to know, go look it up. Yeah, we don't have 80 hours a week to look this stuff up for the rest of our lives so we know every little thing. Congress doesn't even know. Speaking of Congress, I got a listener sent me this very little statement, and I thought this was fantastic. It says, if men of wisdom and knowledge, of moderation and temperance, of patience, fortitude, and perseverance, of sobriety and true Republican simplicity of manners, of zeal for the honor of the supreme being, supreme and being capitalized, and the welfare of the Commonwealth, if men possessed of these other excellent qualities are chosen to fill the seats of government, we may expect that our affairs will rest on a solid and permanent foundation. Written by Samuel Adams, the great brewmaster of Boston. Of course, that's a joke. Founding father. Although, his beer is good stuff. So, let's look at this. Wisdom and knowledge. Most of the people in Congress are pretty smart. However, they're also very shrewd. Of moderation and temperance. Yeah, now we're moving away. of patience, moving away again, fortitude and perseverance. Well, they have a lot of fortitude and perseverance, generally for their special interest. Of sobriety, oh my God, are you kidding me? And true Republican simplicity of manners, yet again, there's probably three Republican simplicity of manners type of people in all of both houses of Congress, of the 535 people. Certainly not even 10%. Probably not even 1%. Sobriety. Yeah, probably the highest level of insobriety there is. Of zeal and honor to the Supreme Being. So many zealots out there, anti-zealots, it's ridiculous. And the welfare of the Commonwealth. Yeah, we just got Obamacare passed. So you can see that our affairs are not resting on solid and permanent foundation. Not today, as defined by Sam Adams many, many years ago. Guys, stay tuned. If I don't get any calls at the beginning of the next section on the what came first, the crossbow or the rifle, I'll give you the answer. But I'd like to have some audience participation. Stay tuned.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
Hey guys, I am going to plug the May 1st and 2nd shoot again. Again, I am running the two-day weekend Shooting with Chalene handgun course at Burrow Canyon Shooting Park in Southern California. The course is $200. That's it, $200. That includes lunch Saturday and Sunday, as well as your range fees are paid for, all the targets, everything else. So all you need to do is pay the $200. You don't need to bring anything else. It's going to be a great class. I have designed at least 3 days' worth of training into this two-day course. How do I do that? I cut everything down to its essence, get rid of all the excess BS. If there's 17 words in a sentence, I trim it down to where we only need to use 8 or 9, and we spend more time on the range actually shooting, actually learning the techniques from some world-class instructors. So go to 2aradio.com or nightingaleforgovernor.com. Click on it, sign up, go. This supports Chalene's campaign. On top of that, what you end up with is some fantastic foundational work on being able to use your handgun for self-defense. All right, you're not going to find any course anywhere for that price. You're not going to find better instructors anywhere. I don't care where you go, who you see, what you do, especially for the price. Plus, the food's going to be great. Guys got like tri-tip and pulled pork and pulled beef and things. Just fantastic food. Hot lunch, it's included. So $200. Going to be about 500 rounds. Bring your gear and go. It's going to rock. I've already written the curriculum. I've got two handfuls of instructors ready to come out. Depending on how many people we sign up, depends on how many of those instructors are actually going to be there. Coming out, bring somebody with you. Sign up for it. Get it done. You have to sign up. You have less than 2 weeks. You have about 12 days to sign up. I think we're done on the 18th. So go online, check it out, sign up, get her done. What came first, the crossbow or the rifle? It was a crossbow. By about 300 or 400 years, the crossbow was very powerful at shorter ranges and able to take knights mounted on their horses completely off. So when it came to finding black powder in China and bringing it over and figuring out how to put together a percussion sort of rifle, they said, all right, well, we need to have a stock like the crossbow. We need to have a trigger like the crossbow. and we'll load it up from there. So the crossbow was the egg, and the chicken came in the form of the rifle. So there you go. Nobody called up. Maybe nobody knew, but there you are. All right, guys. Thanks for spending your morning with me. I appreciate it. Hope you learned a thing or two. Be right back. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for Don and John with the Control Factor coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.